Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, I told you about our esteemed business panel reviewers. I'm going to introduce you to them both now. John Isle is the Deputy Business Editor at the Sunday Times, and he's joined by Caroline Reedy of the HR Suite. Welcome, one and all. Thank you for joining us.
Morning, Bobby.
Morning.
Now, John, some warnings from our Finance Minister, Pascal Donoghue, about the economic, I suppose, reality of the next few weeks and months.
Well, there's a few stories out across most of the dailies today. The Daily Mail, Irish Times and the Irish Independent all reporting on this warning that the government may have to cut public spending because of the levels of Irish public debt, which has been put at over 40,000 euros per person. The gross amount of current debt is about 218 billion euro. And we're basically being told that this is a high level of debt relative to our European peers. We are actually carrying quite a lot for the size of our economy, and that this may affect the spending plans coming up in the October budget.
But other metrics are telling us we're rolling around in a sea of euro notes.
There's a deeper story to be told. My suspicion is we're being softened up for maybe a disappointing budget, right? So if you look behind these numbers, yeah, the absolute amount of debt of 218 billion is a lot, but that's 68% of the gross national income, which is actually a pretty good ratio. Like, nobody's getting upset on financial markets about ratios like that. And in fact, the amount of interest we pay is one of the lowest in the EU. In fact, we pay 163 a day per head versus, say, Italy, which is paying 395. They have a much bigger debt problem in Italy. Now,
this is per person per day.
This is per person, right? Yeah. So you're looking at that, and when you think about it, what really matters is how much money do we have to pay in the years coming up? Now, the fear is that, oh, we have a rollover coming in about 4 years where a quarter of the debt will have to be rolled over. But nobody knows what the interest rates are going to be like in 2030 or 2029. So actually, on a kind of per day basis, on a 6 month to 1 year horizon, we're actually doing very, very well. And I think credit should be given to the NTMA for managing the public finances so well through the pandemic. They raised a lot of cash at low rates, retired a lot of expensive debt. They termed it out, very long maturities. We have a great debt maturity profile in this country. The public finances are, in fact, very sound. There's a 30 billion euro pile of cash sitting in the exchequer that hasn't been spent down. We have the Future Ireland Fund, the Climate and Nature Fund, which is beginning to fill up with money. There's a lot in reserve if we run into trouble.
Yeah. And Caroline, I think John is right. This is softening us up for a tough budget, because this is the time of year when everybody has their hand out, everybody's making their case.
Absolutely.
Everybody's knocking on the minister's door wanting X, Y and Z. So this is maybe a sort of reaction to that.
Without doubt. I think it's total expectation structuring, and they've already said that it's not going to be the giveaway budget that everybody's obviously looking for their tuppence worth at the minute. But what's interesting too is there obviously inflation continues to fall at 1.7%, but beef and butter and food overall is still at 5%. But I do know, for anybody going into a supermarket or the butchers and buying a steak currently, you're saying, oh my God, the price of steak has gone through the roof. But I think overall, you know, people are expecting, hopefully they will be good news for SMEs in there, because they're so important to our economy. We're obviously going to see news on the minimum wage. We're going to see statutory sick pay. And we're also going to see the VAT rate, obviously, for our hospitality, which is a big one that's been talked about. So I think this budget is going to be a one that there's probably an opportunity to give more than they're letting on right now, based on the kitty that's available.
And they want to get rid of any of these one-off payments, which are really expensive, and they're also not targeted. So, you know, I think, but they're hard to get rid of because people get used to them.
Absolutely. And that's what they're really saying, isn't it? You know,
and I think the Labour government found that out to their peril in the UK when they tried to go after welfare payments and disability allowance. It completely blew up in their face.
Absolutely. And look, they're probably the most emotive things to go near. So, you know, it's just the expectation structuring, I think, has been done very well in the last while.
As somebody from the Southwest, Caroline, Eli Lilly committed to Cork plants. It's on the front page of the Irish Examiner. And it's a story worth looking at, because I think it does, you know, put out a marker here for a lot of the talk that's been happening around foreign direct investment around it drifting back to the US. Eli Lilly strongly refuting any notion of them leaving Ireland.
Yeah, which is great news for Kinsale and great news for Raheen in Limerick and the wider economy benefiting from those jobs as well. But I suppose we also see Astellas, for example, as another Irish company investing hugely in the economy again. So we're, even though Trump has been very adamant that he wants to bring these companies back to the US, he hasn't really focused on it at all in recent times. And ultimately, these companies take so long. If they were to start to move back, you know, it's 3 to 5 years at least away. So it's great to see the Astellas and the Eli Lillys really putting their mark in the ground to say these jobs are safe, because these are very well paid, very important jobs to these economies.
Yeah. And I think, John, you know, a lot of these companies, while they'll play the game with politics, in the long term, they're really concerned about their shareholder value. And if they can basically humour Trump while doing what suits them, that's ultimately what they're going
to
do.
I think you do see a lot of that. And they do have to weigh the cost, I suppose, of whatever damage Trump might be able to do to their share price versus the investment they've made already and the strength of the ecosystem in Cork as well. It's, I mean, it's one of the pharmaceutical manufacturing centres of the world, right?
Yeah.
It's not just a sort of sideshow for these companies. And I do think that Trump has maybe shifted a little bit in terms of looking at where is the new investment going to go. So it's the kind of the marginal foreign direct investment is really where the game is going to be played, I think, in the future, as opposed to will they take apart a factory in Kinsale?
Yeah, it's about deferral of future projects, yeah. Really. Yeah. John, when I have you there, the Irish unit of luxury jeweler Bulgari pays out a $90 million dividend even as profits fall 22%. I just was kind of, I didn't know about these numbers, certainly about the scale of this operation. It's an Italian jewellery brand whose creations were famously sought after by actor Elizabeth Taylor, paying out €90 million in a dividend for their Irish operation. Can you explain maybe the history and the corporate setup of this company?
Sure. This company, Bulgari, is owned by LVMH, that's the Louis Vuitton company, which is a listed company. And it was originally set up by a family, the Bulgari family, which has a big family fortune. And there's a couple of brothers who are still involved in the business, according to this story. But it's a very Irish kind of story, because Bulgari, obviously, this isn't a huge market for luxury goods. It's not a place where there's a special talent in the production of luxury goods. But what we're very good at here is the legal and tax consultancy around managing corporate profits.
Well, the sales were $1.46 billion last year. And I'm saying, where was that?
Well, most of it in the Far East, right? Yeah. So Japan, China, places like that. So they're selling these luxury goods all over the world. We know that the Asian market is very important for things like diamonds, jewelry, watches, etc. But these profits are sort of repatriated back through Europe via the Irish units. And there's a significant amount of taxes paid here, nearly $10 million was
paid. So when we're talking about those corporation tax figures, there's $10 million in there that came from this company.
Exactly. And we're accustomed to talking about it in terms of the tech sector, the pharmaceutical sector, etc. But Bulgari is doing the same thing. So there are a lot of companies at this scale or this type of company that you might not be aware of that are doing the same type of clever tax structuring, where they have a sales and operations unit located here and they can run the profits through. Now, it's not a small operation at all. They employ 183 people in the country who are all being paid pretty nice amount of money. I think their the wage bill was $14 million last year across 183 staff. Which,
that's a good average.
It comes out to €76,000. So if anyone's looking for a job, Bulgari, I think, pays pretty well as an average salary. But there's just one interesting thing in the story here in the Irish Times, which is just at the kicker of the story at the end. It says, Bulgari Ireland's use of its brand's global tax structure has attracted close scrutiny from tax authorities in its home country of Italy. In fact, in April 2018, more than a dozen executives linked to the group, including the heirs to the family fortune, were cleared of tax evasion following a trial that focused on the use of its Irish operation. So it has come across the radar of the tax authorities in Italy.
And it continues to trundle on. Okay, Caroline, can I talk to me about insurance? Insurers are calling for reforms and say that legal costs are driving up the cost of claims. Surprise, surprise.
Absolutely.
The insurance industry, not normally known to go up against the legal industry.
No, but this is, again, one of the many pre-budget submissions that are happening at the moment. And Insurance Ireland are looking for the government to act on a few key areas. One is the legal fees. And they're basically saying that we need to do something to really address legal fees. And I suppose we've been seeing this over time where there's a lot more avenues now for people to try and...
PIAB mediation
being encouraged. You know, for employment rights, they go through the Workplace Relations Commission and the Labour Court. So we're seeing more and more avenues to try and have remedies that don't incur the huge legal fees that are involved. So there's probably merit in exploring that further. They're also looking at a savings scheme to be introduced with tax benefits linked to that.
How would that work?
They're basically looking for a model that is in place in Italy and Sweden at the moment, where Irish retailers can invest and get increased opportunity as a result. And the other two areas they're looking at is the pension scheme. We know pension auto-enrolment is coming in Ireland in January 2026. And they're basically saying that this is presenting a risk to companies who may have private schemes in place, and it might be more beneficial for the employee to keep the private scheme. And the fourth and final area they're looking at is simplifying regulation. And I think the simplifying regulation is something that we see Michael McGrath in the European Commission advocating. But we also see every SME, of which the majority of businesses in Ireland are, saying the regulation and the administrative compliance, etc., is a real burden. So that's their fourth key area. So again, I think there's merit in all of them for consideration in this pre-budget submission.
We haven't heard from the lawyers yet, though.
Yeah, without doubt.
Well, no doubt we will.
John, tell me about AerCap warning that a new US listing proposals would lead to more volatility. The Dublin-based firm said that the sophisticated American investors actually understand the jet leasing business. I presume the biggest capital markets are in the US, and this is a company that, and an industry that absorbed lots of capital.
Yeah, exactly. And it's very focused on Ireland, right? So Ireland is one of the global centers for aircraft leasing. I'm going to say a pun now, Bobby. It flies under the radar. Not too many people.
You're up all night thinking of that joke, John.
Anyway, what's happening is the Securities and Exchange Commission is looking at this, I guess, from a regulatory point of view, and they're saying, well, we're a little concerned that these what they call foreign private issuers of capital, like AerCap, which is headquartered here in Ireland but has a listing over in the US, it's a $22 billion company. It's not small by any stretch of the imagination. They said, we want to make sure investors are properly protected because there are certain regulatory rules that they are that they don't have to follow. So quarterly reports, for instance. In the US, every investor gets a quarterly report from a company that they're involved in. These foreign private issuers only have to issue semi-annual reports. So the SEC is saying, are we regulating these companies properly? Maybe we should make them have a secondary listing in another market closer to home so that they would have extra regulatory scrutiny. Now, AerCap is saying, no.
We don't want that.
One, it's extra cost, but it will cause other problems for existing shareholders, right? That you'll have two prices in two markets, so you get regulatory arbitrage. So people might be selling out of shares in New York and, say, buying shares in London because there's an arbitrage opportunity to make money. And then also, he says, we won't necessarily have the same liquidity in the stock anymore because our investors will be split between two markets, which means that when there are price moves, they'll be much more dramatic. And so investors will be disadvantaged.
Says that concentrating our listing on a single market maximizes liquidity benefits for our shareholders. Exactly. I get that.
And that's exactly what companies like CRH, Smurfit Kappa, and Flutter moved their listings from Dublin to New York exactly for that reason.
Right.
Because it's a deep, liquid pool of capital with lots of trading, and you get more accurate price discovery as a result. So it seems like a puzzling move to me from the SEC. I don't quite understand what's behind it. It sounds like maybe they would like to wash their hands of responsibility for certain foreign private issuers like that. But in any case, not great for AerCap if they're forced to do it.
Okay. Caroline, Tesla wants to pay Musk $1 trillion, but he must reach formidable targets first. This is a really interesting story. Do you reckon that he wrote his own job spec and remuneration package here, or what do you make of all this?
I suppose performance-related bonuses and long-term incentives are not new. But what is new is the, I suppose, plucking the figures from thin air. And I think ultimately, I suppose, this is a 10-year plan. Obviously, there'd be a lot of HR scenarios that you'd be thinking about. You know, what does the next 10 years look like? They're future planning it already to that level of detail. But also, I suppose, the valuations and the numbers based on them. So it's he gets nothing, no salary, no nothing, unless Tesla hit the figures in terms of valuation.
Fair, if you look at it objectively, if you were a Tesla shareholder, here's a guy, like, if these figures are achieved, what Tesla shareholders will make is immeasurable.
I suppose you'll also have to consider, you know, in 3 years' time, if there's a big falling out, you know, how is the, what's the exit strategy there?
Well, maybe let's run through the package. So he'd have to boost Tesla's market capitalization to 8.5 trillion from, so that's
one
from one
now.
Point odd today. So that's
huge.
Eight times in a very short period of time. That's more than twice that of Nvidia, currently the most valuable company in the world, at 4.2 trillion. Like, these numbers are just...
Yeah. The cars, robot taxis, and the AI powered robots is obviously where they expect these to come from.
And there's no sales of those at the moment.
No, the cars are at 8 million, but the robo taxis and the AI powered robots, there's none yet. So it's a very ambitious plan. The board obviously are anxious to lock him in, and he seems committed. It's a huge incentive plan, but I wonder if we were here in 10 years' time, what we'd be reviewing in terms of success.
Johnny also has golden handcuffs because he can't sell the stock for 7.5 years and must renegotiate with the board, which would be interesting, before making any large disposals to reduce volatility in the stock price.
I think, to understate things massively, this is a very unusual company and a very strange sort of structure, right? I think the board is really completely captured by Elon Musk. He's the largest single shareholder. He kind of dictates everything that goes on there. And it's really his celebrity that drives a lot of the stock price. So you're basically betting that Elon Musk will be able to keep all the plates spinning for the next decade. A couple of things stood out to me. One was that they're looking at subscription-based auto driving, right? So the
driverless cars.
Driverless cars. So it's subscription-based. That's interesting because that kind of recurring revenue, right, as opposed to you buy a piece of hardware, it's like what's happened in the tech world, right? You buy a subscription, you know, like I have to Apple TV or whatever, extra space on my Gmail or whatever. I have all these subscriptions, and this is really where a lot of the recurring revenue comes from. It's like when Apple turned from a hardware to a...
If you can get the recurring revenue,
that's great.
You're on the gravy train.
But then there's a lot of criticism. I mean, the Reuters report on this is just kind of dripping with sarcasm, right? So it says the proposal underscores the hold Mr. Musk has over the car maker as it attempts to transition into an AI and robotics powerhouse. So not really a car company at all. And there's a quote from someone in the Boston College Law School called Brian Quinn says, given that Tesla's stock price is basically all vibes, it appears to have very little to do with the automaker's actual performance, and I suspect they will approve the package. So really, nobody's looking at fundamentals here. They're saying, like, it's almost like wish casting. You know, this is where we want to be in 10 years, so let's just pretend it's going to happen and you can get $1 trillion when it does.
Yeah, no, it is. It's, as I say, it's well worth the read. Caroline, this story that I found on page 49 of the Mail, it's Mal Rogers' column. He does all these reviewing of wonderful tourist spots. But he made reference to October the 4th, which is a day I didn't know about, but it's called Cinnamon Bun Day. Can you tell me more about that, please?
I love these days. They're just genius, you know. I mean, and basically this one is a Swedish tradition. October 4th is Cinnamon Day in Sweden. And about 10 million buns are consumed in Sweden, which is more than the number of Swedes that there are. So it's obviously a very successful, successful initiative. So definitely we can see it's a brilliant idea, though, isn't it, to come up with these, you know, national days for things that really drive it. And they've become superly famous for it. People go there, everybody has one, and it's they're famous for it as a result. And yeah, they sound good.
Yeah, I know. And he mentions this, I'm sure I'll butcher the pronunciation of Alingsås, a modest industrial town in the southern part of Sweden, styles itself the capital of fika. Fika being the Swedish for a break for coffee and cake and a natter.
I love it.
So it's coffee, cake and gossip all rolled
it
into
sounds
one.
Sounds very Irish.
Wonderful experience.
I think they are.
John, I want you to pronounce the last column about the other products that they talk about, because butchered that last one,
you're going to make me speak Swedish.
I want to see how you're going to do on the other two pronunciations.
Cardamom and buller. And vanilla bullet, which I think is a cardamom bun and a vanilla bun. So you get all
very
different
good
flavors.
Very good guess, John. Very
you get all
good
of these
guess.
Flavors of these delicious, so cinnamon mixed with other spices. The Swedes, I think, have a real sweet tooth. Aren't they famous for eating the kind of those packaged sweets as well?
Yeah.
So they love their
sugar. And
their
Stalin and all that. Well, look, it's been a wonderful review of the business stories, topped by a review of the cinnamon bun. Thanks. Big thanks, as always. Caroline Reedy from the HR Suite, indeed, and John Isle from the Sunday Times. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy your weekend.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.